The Star Wars universe is constantly expanding.
So how the heck are you going to keep tabs on it without a holocron? And where in the rim can I score the juiciest news and rumors?
Ah, you seek State of the Empire, Nerdy Show's Star Wars speculation podcast that looks for news in Alderaan places.
We dig into the Sarlacc pit of the internet for the hottest intel in the galaxy far, far away, make Indiana Jones inquiries, and keep watch for the latest on Willow.
Head to nerdyshow.com/Star Wars. It's the show you're looking for.
The following program is presented by the Nerdy Show Network. Geeky programming for all nerds across the multiverse. All Nerdy Show programming is made possible by A Comic Shop, Orlando's number one comic shop and nerd destination, and with the generous support of listeners like you. To learn how you can support this and other fine geek programming, visit nerdyshow.com.
Welcome to Nerdy Show, a weekly podcast dedicated to every facet of nerddom, from comics and video games to science and technology. If it's geeky, we've got it covered. Hi, I'm Cap.
Hey, I'm Doug.
I'm Boar.
And I'm John.
And thank you so much, everybody, for giving us a two-week vacation. I assure you, it wasn't necessarily a vacation for any of us.
Yeah.
Yeah, not really.
But what have we been filling this time with?
Much.
Well, speaking personally, I traveled to Tucson, Arizona, and hung out with the folks at Fangamer for a little while. I actually don't know if I can talk about what we did, but this is the first year since 2015 there hasn't been a Camp Fangamer, which is their major, very strange convention event, an immersive narrative experience. Mm-hmm. I've gone on and on about it in past episodes, published a huge article about the 2015 iteration. And so there wasn't one this year, but I did some stuff. Don't get too excited. Just some on-camera video work. No big deal. But some very exciting things are happening over there. As you might know, they're the force behind the physical edition of Undertale. The one for PS4 that comes with the music box.
Oh, yes. Oh, okay.
Now, they've been doing merch for Undertale since it started. They did those amazing Undertale figurines and that great 90s action figure style commercial for them. What I didn't realize was that as Fangamer's stepping into this bigger world of producing one of the hottest pre-orders spiraling out of E3, that they're actually handling all that shipping themselves.
Oh, wow.
Those poor bastards.
So I've been to their first... They've rented out space in the past. I've been to some of Fangamer's humble beginnings and rented out office spaces. But 2 years ago, they got their own standalone shipping distribution office space. That is not cutting it anymore, and that was a hefty space. So, like, I don't know if the deal is sealed, but they are shopping around for a warehouse. I toured a warehouse with them.
Wow.
Big things coming for Fangamer. Very, very exciting, because they're amazing people. They make amazing stuff. And it was awesome to get to hang out with them, because I was worried I wasn't going to get to, and they're dear, sweet friends. While I was there, it was, you know, mostly work and a bit of play, but I did look up on flotation locations if there was a float center in Tucson.
And, oh, yeah?
And there were a couple.
Is this some new website that you're subscribed to?
Well, I talked about it when I talked about the sensory deprivation experiences. I believe the episode is called Journeys of the Body and the Mind.
I remember something about a Groupon. I don't remember anything about a specific website for floating.
Yeah, well, Groupon is how I afford this at all, because it's way too expensive for me generally. But there's also a website called Flotation Locations where you type in your zip code and find out if there's a float center near you.
Yeah.
So I was like, what's the deal in Tucson? What you got? And they had a really cool new agey joint called Cloud9 Flotation, run out of a lady's house. Very, very nice, very well appointed. No, it's a professional business, but like, it's got this great homey, intimate feel. And
They put you under the floorboards. It's fantastic.
What sold me on it was that they had a thing on their menu called the Heavenly Sandwich.
What does that even mean?
I'm interested.
Explain.
And I was like, okay, so I'm going to Tucson, hanging out with my Earthbound pals at Fangamer, and that sounds like an item from Earthbound, so let's do it. It was 2-hour-long float sessions with, in between, some sonic sound therapy and Reiki. That's like the meat, and then the buns are the floats.
Okay.
And it was fun. Like I put my head inside of like, if you take the shape of a pyramid, just the beams that make the shape of a pyramid.
Obviously, yeah.
And say you're making it out of sticks. Well, in this case, the sticks making that shape are crystal rods, and you put your head in between the crystal rods, and they're all toned differently. So basically, you get this bizarre 360.
They're all toned differently.
Well, I mean, they have different frequency. When you kabong them with a mallet, they have different tones.
Okay.
And okay. So you're smacking crystals.
Yeah.
Around your head.
Yeah, around my head.
For the music,
that are,
music has
different lengths and widths to create different sounds.
Now, I don't know that
maybe
that crystals or Reiki or sound baths do anything of the sort, but I do know that it does make my head tingle. So no arguments here.
Interesting.
After that, let's see. Came back to Orlando, and Doug, Tony, Local Shop, and I went to Megaplex and showed off Lightning Dogs, and it was a great time. We'll be talking more about that on the Lightning Dogs podcast.
Mm-hmm.
But suffice it to say, we met a lot of cool people. We had a lot of fun. We did a panel, and generally a very good weekend.
It was an experience. Definitely an experience.
We met the human version of one of our lightning dogs.
Yeah, that was interesting. it's how would you even begin to explain?
Well, there's a lightning dog named Pierre.
Yeah.
And he's tall.
Yeah.
And he has, like, he's a poodle.
Uh-huh.
And he has a poodle afro.
Mm-hmm.
He's into martial arts, and his superpower is running.
Mm-hmm.
We met a guy who was all of that except not a poodle.
Yeah. He was the human version.
And he saw Pierre on the page and was like, holy shit, that's me.
Yeah.
And then as we talked to him more, we discovered, oh, that is you.
Yeah.
And
at first it was just like, ha ha ha, passing resemblance. Then the longer we talked, it was like, what? Like, is this a joke? Like, you just came by and just say yes to everything that we're asking you? Like, you know, do you do any martial arts? Yes. Oh, you know, do you like cheeseburgers? Yes. Do you like to run fast? Yes. It's like I have all these things stacked up.
Have you ever fought a glampire?
Yeah. He wasn't just answering yes. It was yes and.
Yeah, it was yes and. Yeah, yeah.
So, all in all, a great weekend. We did a lot of sketching. We were doing dirt cheap con sketches.
I gave two away for free, and I'm not an artist. I just sketched a doodle and then I handed it away.
I'm sure everyone's very grateful that those were free.
Yeah,
but they were fun.
Yeah.
The it was free drawings and free fun from Doug.
Yes, because I was feeling left out since I wasn't an artist, and people are always asking for art.
You usually charge a premium for fun too.
Yeah, it's really my time. That's what I end up spending. So it wasn't free for me. It was a lot of gave me some humility, knowing that I couldn't really do that well. It was a good wake up. It was a good reminder why we have artists and why I can't be jack of all trades. So,
if you're not aware of Lightning Dogs, it's an animated series we're developing. There's more info at lightningdogs.com and a podcast detailing our entire experience, as well as our 36-page sketchbook of all of our favorite concept art so far, and it's only $5, so you can pick that up online. It's only $3 if you want a digital version. Head
digital
to nerdyshow.com/store for some digital styles of all sorts. John, what have you been up to?
I've been spending a lot of time in the VR. They've come out with like a lot of like CAD programs in the last couple of weeks. Like Google came out with one that's sort of like Tilt Brush, but for actually making 3D models. Then there was like another one that came out, and I think even like another one. It's just getting like really, really crazy. So I've been trying to figure out which ones of them would actually be useful, you know, what their drawbacks are. And it's kind of crazy, you know? none of them let me actually measure though, which I find to be really obnoxious, because if you're making stuff physically and it actually has to be mechanically sound, you need to be able to, you know, keep material thicknesses exactly so. Mm. You know what I mean?
So like, for clarity, if anyone's wondering what a CAD program is or anything, John, you're basically sculpting in virtual space. And
yes.
You sent me a picture of a weird dragon dog face that you'd... How did you make that? Was that like with your hands somehow or like shape tools?
Yeah, no, that was just the Vive. It's a program called Codon, that one specifically. And basically they're trying to be the ZBrush, which, you know, is a very, very high level professional program. Anybody who does any 3D modeling, even slightly organic, uses it somewhere in their, you know, group of programs, right?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's basically trying to be the Codon of the virtual reality space. I made the entire thing in like 3 minutes and like, you know, is it perfect? No, but is it like, you know, pretty well detailed? Could I then take that into ZBrush and clean it up?
Well, sure. Yeah, that doesn't look like that. What you sent me didn't look like 3 minutes, because I mean, hopefully everybody's seen the dingo from Lightning Dogs that I built in Google Tilt Brush, which took me, I believe, 3 hours.
Yeah,
and it looks like garbage. I mean, it's fun garbage, but it's garbage.
Well, it was like, you know, it was like an impressionistic version. That's all.
Yeah, no. If I mean, after you got your feet wet, so to speak, in Codon, you probably would have been able to do that in, you know, 15 minutes. Not necessarily the gun, because it doesn't do straight lines quite as well. Although, anyway, that's what ZBrush is for, right?
I guess. I'll believe everything
and
you tell
those
me.
And other CAD programs that are more good for the, you know, squares, rectangles, those kinds of things.
So if you were able to sculpt an interesting thing in 3D in the virtual space, what would you be doing with it? Would you be producing jewelry or like models?
You could. I mean, the reality of it is that that's basically a pretty much fully 3D ready or 3D printable model right there. And so you could do models right away. You could definitely then take that and run it through some of the other programs to clean it up and go ahead and paint it and, you know, rig it up for 3D animation, put it in games, put it in movies. You know, I mean, you pretty much have your whole gateway open from there.
Wow. Okay. That's much more powerful than I anticipated you saying. The fact
I mean, it's a freaking completely normal 3D model and you can export it to the stars.
So you could hypothetically make a computer animated film where all of the characters were sculpted like claymation, but 100% in virtual space.
Yeah, I mean, probably it'd just be, you know, miserable like any project like that, right?
Yeah.
Like, my life, where did it go? Anyway.
Well,
but yeah.
That's crazy. Yep. How about you, Boar?
Oh, man. I've been doing a lot of traveling, so I haven't been, consuming quite as much as I would want to as far as, you know, movies and TV shows and whatnot. But in the time that I've had free, I have been able to play a little bit of Quake Champions. I revisited that game a while back. I brought it up when it first came out.
And you were
out,
like, no.
And I was like, no. And I think, thinking back, a lot of my problem had to do with the net code was really bad and the game was really fast. So it just was kind of like a horrible cocktail for not fun. but they seem to have improved the net code and the game runs a lot more smoothly now. So it's pretty fun, except for the only thing that was bugging me is I used to play a lot of like Quake 3 and Unreal Tournament and stuff like that, and I used to be really good at it, and you know, it, like, it's a very Twitch game, you have to have really fast reactions and stuff like that, but this made me feel like an old man, and I was like, am I just this out of touch with this type of game? I mean, I've been playing shooters since then. Am I just this dull nowadays?
Uh-huh.
You just aren't dropping astronaut speed like all the kids are.
Well, the thing is I'm pretty sure this game is way faster than even Quake 3 was. Because as a comparison, Unreal Tournament has a new like alpha version out now. And that game feels like, you know, the original Unreal Tournaments. And those games were pretty fast also. But I loaded up Unreal Tournament, the new alpha version, and it feels really, really slow by comparison to Quake Champions. So I don't think it's completely in my head, combined with the fact that some of these champions have like movement speed increasing abilities on top of their already freakish speed.
What?
So yeah, like there's one character, and he's like he's a damn lizard man, and
God damn it,
yeah, and he's got the ability to bunny hop, which is it used to be like a glitch where you could kind of like hop and increase your speed.
Hopping lizards, disgusting.
But he can increase his speed by just repeatedly hopping. And you can get to ridiculous speeds with characters like that. And I didn't feel as bad after that. But if you load up like Overwatch or something like that after you've been playing Quake Champions, you're like, why am I covered in tar? Everything is so slow. I don't know. That's interesting. It's kind of frustrating because I'm not the greatest at it yet. But
you're playing it, which is kind of surprising.
Yeah. Yeah.
Huh.
I have continued to play it, so we'll see. You know, I don't think I'm going to be competing at a professional esports level anytime soon. But
well, you're going to need some performance enhancing drugs first.
I probably will. So anything to increase my brain, like hand coordination there,
like some gamer blood.
Gamer blood. Yeah. I don't know what that is, but I want it.
Comes in flavors like tactical grape.
Maybe if I had a blood boy, I could be infused with the blood of a younger gentleman to or increase bunny. my vitality.
Shimmering neon green.
Yeah. another one I've been playing is PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds. Have you heard of this one at all?
No, not at all.
Not at all. Okay. It's kind of like a... have you seen the movie Battle Royale?
I have not. Japanese I'm familiar movie? With the premise.
Okay. It's... I'm told I haven't seen Hunger Games, but I'm told it's similar.
I'm told Hunger Games is a ripoff of Battle Royale.
Yes, I'm also told that, but I've only seen Battle Royale. But basically, the premise is in Battle Royale, anyway, they put all these kids on an island and they made them fight to the death
for a reality show.
Well, no, it's maybe. It's like a government issued thing to clean up.
Okay,
yeah, ne'er do wells.
I'm just thinking of like Nasubi and other Japanese reality shows that are kind of like that without the murder.
Yeah, but anyway, this one they get a load of, I don't know, about 100 players together, put them on a plane, and then this plane starts flying over an island, and at any point you want, you can hit a button and then jump back from the plane and then parachute down to the ground. Now this is like a big abandoned island that clearly had some form of civilization on it before. So there's like little towns and cities and prisons and airports and stuff like that. So once you land, you have to start scavenging and finding guns and ammo and equipment and armor and whatnot. And then you have to survive. The thing that speeds it up is there's like a play area. So there's a big circle on the map. And if you're not within that circle, you slowly die. And it starts off that the circle isn't really there. They just kind of say that, you know, there's a gray,
most of the island
there's a gray is, circle, yeah. And they're just like, hey, you've got to get within this circle within like 10 minutes or something.
I've got some questions already. Okay, so this is a video game.
This is a video game.
Is it a first-person shooter?
First or third.
Okay. And it's a online-only competitive game?
Yes.
With a shockingly intense premise.
Yep, with... about
there's no story for
with
what I
roughly 100 people at a time,
yeah. And
give or take.
And is the idea you start playing it and then you play it for a set amount of time and then it ends? Or it ends when everyone's dead?
It ends when everyone's dead.
So you typically start at the beginning and play for an undetermined amount of time until it's over.
Well, the circle keeps shrinking.
Yeah, the circle keeps shrinking. And if you don't stay within the circle, you die.
Like okay.
It starts sapping away your health, and like the further away from the circle you are, the faster you die.
And how long does it take to do that?
A little while. Like if you're just a little bit out of bounds of the circle, sometimes you can, you know,
run into it
and you'll be okay. You just need to bandage yourself up a little bit.
So you could probably use that strategically if you absolutely had to go through the outside.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. Like if you're, you know, pretty good at killing other people and you can get yourself into the center of the circle and set up a little fort or something, you can probably pick people off as they're hurrying into the circle or something. But it's interesting. It's a lot more fun if you go in a squad. So if you have some friends that are playing it, you can all team up and it'll like group you together and show you in the game where the other people are. So that makes it a little bit more fun because if you get shot enough, you don't die right away. They can help you up and you can kind of keep going. If they've got your back enough, like if they're able to clear out whoever shot you or whatever, It's pretty interesting, but the only bad thing is sometimes you can, you know, you'll drop down, you'll find a bunch of amazing gear, you'll get like, oh, I've got an AK-47 and I've got full armor and I've got a backpack full of survival gear, let's headshot. Do this, and then yeah, headshot or something, like the first time you see somebody and you just built up,
or don't see them at
you,
all
you yeah. built up your arsenal for 20 minutes or yeah. something, and then you just fall over. But it's interesting. Sometimes it's extremely satisfying. Other times it is extremely frustrating. So it's an early access game, and they're supposed to be improving it, obviously, since it's early access.
I mean, it sounds like a great premise and a lot of fun.
Yeah. My only gripe, like the thing I would change about it, is the circle mechanic goes a little bit too quickly. Because it kind of, I get that, you know, they want to force the matches to be faster, but it seems like they accelerate it just a little bit too much, because sometimes I get in a game and I'm far away from the circle and I spend most of my time just worrying about being in the circle.
I could see myself wanting a game mode where there is no circle and it's just like
last one alive.
Yeah. And it becomes the strategic hide and seek.
It may be impossible that long then, because you could hide in a fucking bush and no one would ever find you.
Yeah, I know. So that's believe me, I know. But yeah. You know, you're not the deadliest game. You know, is or hunt or whatever. You want humans hunting humans in a
maybe
survival
maybe
scenario.
In that version of the game, they would just have to have like a collar on you that if you didn't move every now and then, it would zap you a little
bit.
Yeah,
yes. if you don't move
to discourage camping.
Yeah, like if you don't move within 10 minutes, it starts zapping you.
Yeah.
And then, yeah.
Well, in Sword Art Online, when they did the, I think it was Gun Gale or whatever, like, they had a satellite that would pass over every 10 minutes or something, and you could then see where everybody was unless they had managed to obscure themselves somehow.
Uh-huh.
That's an interesting take on
it. It really made you have to keep moving, because otherwise everybody knew where the fuck you were. Huh. Alternatively, you could just start carpet bombing the entire island after, you know, 30 minutes and see who manages to dodge the warplanes.
That is actually already a mechanic. There's red zones that awesome. Show up and they bomb the... if you're in a red zone, they bomb the crap out of it.
Oh, God, it hurts to laugh. My abs.
Oh, humble brag, John's abs.
Oh, and as an interesting aside on that same topic, have you seen Twitch plays Pokemon or anything like that before?
Wait, just in general?
Yes.
I mean, like, internet sensation.
Are you familiar with the concept of Twitch plays?
Of course.
Top nerdy thing of the year when it
came
out?
Yeah, exactly.
Of course,
Okay, so they have Twitch plays Players Unknown Battlegrounds.
Oh.
How does that work?
How the fuck does that work?
Well, they just play the game. They put somebody that, you know, they just have a character that's constantly playing the game, and people like input commands into the chat, and then that player does that. And
so a human player has to interpret the written commands?
No. It automatically, like, the computer.
So he just starts spinning in a circle, and nothing ever happens.
No, but sometimes, you know, like I said, that they're in a plane and they can choose when they fall out at any time.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times when I watched it, they were landing right in the ocean because, you know, they weren't being intelligent about when to release.
Yeah.
So then most of the time people were trying to fight to get the character just onto shore. And, you know, a lot of times...
How can you aim or shoot with all those inputs?
You basically can't.
Well, congratulations.
There's like a big delay and everything, but...
Right.
Twitch Play still sounds less fun than ever.
It's still kind of funny because... Every now and then, it'll last a surprisingly long time.
And they'll be like in the top 10 finalists of you know.
Right, because it'll just be derping around in a corner somewhere, and that's actually sort of a valid strategy as long as you're within the circle. But anyway.
Oh, fuck, did Twitch beat me? Like,
how about you, Doug?
Well, lately, busy doing work for Nerdy Show and the convention and whatnot like that. But at home... I've been replaying the remastered edition of Uncharted, because it released on PS4, and I played it years and years and years ago, but I wanted to play it again, mostly because I had finished the fourth game, and my wife, who was pretty vocal about her, I don't want to say distaste for video games, but definitely, like, she loves certain games. Like, she loves certain, like, side-scrollers, she loves the classics, but she doesn't, like, enjoy these... running shooters, and she's like, oh, they never have any great story or anything. I'm like, no, Uncharted is like the one that you should play because it has an amazing story and amazing characters. And she just kind of rolls her eyes at it. But she was watching me play the fourth one and is like, this does look really good. And I'm like, yeah, you should play. It would be great, you know, and you could, you know, experience this amazing story. And I'm trying to convince her to play the others by playing the remastered one. And the way I'm doing it is I'm doing the remastered, the first three remastered on hard difficulty so that I unlock the ability so that when she does play it, it's just one shot kills for the enemies because I don't know, because she's so not used to like 3D like games, like running shooters where you have like, you know, using both toggles on the gamepad where you're like,
I've heard of games when you complete them, they unlock like a harder mode.
Oh yeah. This has that.
I haven't heard of the opposite of that.
Nah, yeah, no. This it's all in good fun because like they have a mode called Explorer mode where it's really like it's not even easy. It's like dirt easy. It's like really, really easy. And I'm worried that even that might be too much to throw at her. So that's why I want to give her like the Explorer mode plus one shot kills plus infinite ammo.
Okay.
You know, whatever. Just so she can go through and play it and not have to worry about it. Because again, I tried to get her to play Oblivion when that came out. And in the beginning.
Oh, Oblivion is so complicated.
It is. But just even her trying to escape the jail cell was like almost impossible because she couldn't coordinate her feet movement with her head movement. Like she was never looking in the direction she was moving.
Where and they basically just drag you out of the prison practically by force.
Yeah, and she couldn't quite wrap her mind around it. She can play she could play Mega Man, she could play Mario, like nothing. She could run through it. It's great. She has a lot of fun. But for whatever reason, games where you're moving in a 3D space, she just has a hard time figuring it out.
Okay.
What about Mario 64?
I don't know if she's played it. She's probably played it at some point, but she probably would strongly prefer the 2D version because it's strange.
Well, you don't have to simultaneously worry about where Mario's head is looking and where he's running at the same time.
True.
True.
Yeah. Hmm. But Uncharted, you know, I can tell that she's going to like it if she just gets, you know, that far into it, because it's not like I've like, oh, you should play Mass Effect. She's like, I'm not really into the lasers, you know, or like the shooting or the aliens or whatever.
Lasers. And people should know, if you're a fan of Ghostbusters, this is Nina from Ghostbusters that Doug is talking about.
Yeah. And you know,
they don't have that many lasers. I mean, most of them are firing particles.
Yeah, well, you know, semantics. It's like, to anyone who's like, you know, outside, it's like, actually, it's using a Mass Effect field. It's not really lasers at all. Anyway, but the so I'm very close to, like, I just finished the first game, so that one's gonna be unlocked, ready for her to play. So I'm like, there, look, Nina, I beat it. You can, you know, now you can play it and start this amazing process, and I'll just try and remain one game ahead of you. So by the time you get to that game, it'll be unlocked with all the easy modes and whatever. And she's like, I don't know if I want to play it anymore. I've been watching you play it for like 5 hours. I'm like, no, I've already like cursed myself. Like, she's already seen half of it because I went through and I'm trying to beat it on hard mode and I keep dying over and over again. And the point being, since I'm playing it on this like hard mode, which is harder than any other, because I'm a wimp, I'll just play it on easy or maybe normal, like when I first play a game. But playing on hard mode just to unlock this, I'm like getting frustrated over and over again. I'm just painting a very negative picture.
I typically don't like hard modes because they seem to spend most of their time balancing the normal mode, and then the hard modes are usually like the AI is just psychic or something.
Yeah, you know, like, no, it really is like it, yes, yeah. It's
Perfect Sims.
It was insulting. It was like, I'm getting towards the end of the game, and, you know, it's one shot kills basically by the time you get to the end, and everyone's aim gets better the closer you get to the end of the game. So basically, never stick your head up ever, and you have to blind fire, whittle down someone's health, so you have to have enough ammo saved up so that you can blind fire, miss 25% of your shot. Yeah. It's insane. It's like,
that's typically why I don't like hard modes. I know, like, arena shooters and stuff, like Quake 3, for example, if you turn the difficulty level up enough, the bots just always knew where you were.
Yeah.
Like, if you looked at their perspective, they were just watching you through walls, you know?
And playing the first Uncharted is also, like, you can see how a game develops, like how it gets more sophisticated as it goes along as a series. Because I literally just finished the fourth one, and then I went back to play the first one, and it's so quaint in like what it tries to accomplish comparatively. But there's so many cheap shots where it's just like, all right, just cleared an area, I just cleared it, and then I step forward, and from behind a pillar, a guy who was literally standing there the whole time, waited and listened as all of his buddies died, you know, and just to get that bam shotgun, like, you know, out of nowhere type of thing. So I die and I because you one shot kill, so I restart the area. I know the guy's behind the pillar the entire time, and I'm throwing grenades and everything, and it doesn't work. I could even see part of the elbow sticking out, like waiting to come out. And it's like, I don't want to say it ruins the game, but it definitely made me go, damn, I'm so frustrated, like, playing through the same things over and over and over again. A game that I previously enjoyed now has become like a grind that left it.
You turned it into Dark Souls.
Yes. No, it really did. I think you hit the nail on the head, because it's like, okay, knowing this, I have to somersault from here to here because this thing is swinging. It's going to knock me down. So it's, yeah, it's an experience. I wouldn't recommend it. Like, I don't recommend playing any of them on hard mode. I just be true to yourself and play it normal, because you don't want to risk hating something that you already love.
In defense of hard modes, in some games, you know, they'll just ramp up the difficulty a little bit, sure. And they'll just give, like, instead of making the AI psychic, they'll just give them more health, or give you less health, or less powerful guns or something.
This does all of that. Like,
it does,
like,
all of it.
Like, except it does not increase the intelligence of the AI of the enemies that are fighting you, because they'll still, like,
no, like, you know, yeah, that's when they just have aimbots or something.
Yeah, and it's the other thing is they get hyper aggressive. So it's like, I'll be in like a church and there's a lot of pillars and stuff, and they'll, instead of it being like maybe three guys, now it's like eight, and they all come swarming in and they all have grenades, and they all just start, there he is, like, immediately, there he is, like, I didn't even, I'm crouched behind a pew, haven't stuck my head up, they walk into the area, immediately know where I am. And they all start throwing grenades at the same time, so much so that their grenades are, like, bouncing off of pillars, coming back at them, and it kills half of them before I even do anything, because they are so hardcore trying to get me. Like, one guy will throw a grenade, and, like, three more will try to rush my position, and they just, I don't know. So it's humorous in one way, but it's a, yeah, I wouldn't really recommend
anything about computer AI over the years, from movies anyway, it's that if they wanted to be more intelligent, they would probably have to tap into other video game consoles or computers or something to increase their cognitive abilities.
You have to have a bigger, you have to server, right? Server space. It's all about, like, need more RAM.
Like, I think in Next Generation, when Data made Moriarty on accident, I feel like...
The
ship's computer, like... It had a brownout as it was trying to make that superior AI.
And everyone, and it was like, oh, that was a weird little glitch that just happened. Now it's like, all right, we've made it now. Here's Moriarty. how crazy was it when Moriarty tricked them? Like, how much computer space did it need to trick? For Moriarty, who is a computer program, artificially intelligent, is kind of his own life form in a weird way.
It would have been really interesting to see the
outside
system,
what was happening.
CPU usage throughout the Enterprise.
The lights all dimmed 50%, like, all across the Enterprise.
Life support, not essential.
Yeah.
Not for holograms.
So I want to give a quick shout out to two awesome comic books that came out recently. They're both indies. One is called Mech Cadet U, and it's from Greg Pak, longtime super accomplished comic book author, and Takeshi Miyazawa, who both of whom created the Marvel character Amadeus Cho, like the Incredible Hulk's super genius young kid pal after Rick Jones kind of grew up and became redundant. Amadeus has been a great character through the years. Pak is still doing an awesome job of writing him now that Amadeus himself has become a Hulk of a kind. That's a whole... Hey, comic books, folks. But on the independent comics front, they've just started this series called Mech Cadet U, and it's about a world where some sentient giant robots came to Earth looking for humans to pilot them because an alien menace was coming to Earth, and they needed to have this kind of symbiosis of some kind to combat them. At this point, the story takes place some like 60 or so years later, so that the Sky Corps Academy has of these robots coming to Earth, new recruits getting in these robots, has become basically a tradition. There's this infrastructure that's been set up, and it's very elitist. So you get in the academy and you train to be the best and fuck everybody else. And this is the story of a young janitor kid who dreams of piloting a giant robot, and by chance, his heart is pure, and he gets to pilot a giant robot and bruises the egos of a bunch of other motherfuckers.
So as you were telling me this story, I was trying to count the number of things it reminded me of. So it was Robotech meets Pacific Rim meets Titanfall, and you ended it with Good Will Hunting. And that is the strangest mix I could imagine. Was not expecting it to go there.
Well, Mech Cadet U, it's only one issue in so far, and it's great. And the other one is...
How do you like them apples?
The other one's very, very strange. It's called Galacticon, and it is an adaptation of a concept record that Brendan Small of Home Movies and Death Clock wrote in 2012. So in 2012, he did a concept record that I didn't know about, and now a sequel to that concept record is coming out, and also a comic book adaptation of the first concept record.
Interesting.
You know, whenever I hear the name Brendan now, I always just think of Coach McGurk. Just immediately.
Well, I can't do a good H. John Benjamin, so I'm not gonna.
No.
And just imagine that for yourself. Basically, what this is a space opera comedy about a deadbeat space superhero in the middle of a divorce. And didn't get a prenup, made a bunch of terrible decisions, and maybe he's going to save the universe now or get himself killed in the process. But he just lost his condo, so he doesn't have much left to lose. So that's Galacticon. They're both really great. Check them out. Now, DuckTales is back. A hour-long premiere episode of the brand new DuckTales series recently aired on Disney XD. I believe you can still watch it streaming online if you have a cable connection and insert your data. I don't know how one watches it for free or if that's
I would
possible.
Imagine that it's probably going to be on Hulu before too long. I don't know if maybe they'll wait until the end of the season or something, but a lot of the Disney shows have been showing up on Hulu.
Maybe. But I think we probably all grew up loving the original DuckTales.
Mm-hmm. Woo!
And the show was fantastic, and the Scrooge McDuck comics, which I discovered later in life, are likewise fantastic and has a whole rich history of shockingly deep continuity and a bunch of Europeans just being all about Donald Duck. He's so much bigger than Mario and Mickey and all the other mascots. It's Donald all the way over there. So there's a lot riding on this. DuckTales has a very storied history. Bringing it back, it's serious business. And what they've done here is a astoundingly stylized show that is full of charm and fun and has uplifted the original formula into something that really meets the standards of today's episodic storytelling.
Hmm.
It's very much an all-ages thing. I mean, sure, it's for kids, but it's as much for kids as Gravity Falls is. You know, maybe not as deep as Gravity Falls, but it's a good time. So I'm just putting that out there. Everyone should check it out. And, oh, man, it just got it. It's doing it right. For example, Scrooge McDuck, he's an adventure capitalist.
Adventure
capitalist. It was there all along. It's so good.
Well, I think, you know, the term venture capitalist has worked its way more into our psyche these days. So even if it was a thing back when the original thing happened, like not, it wasn't on everybody's brains. So
yeah, but now's the time.
That is great.
And he's voiced by an actual Scotsman for a change, David Tennant.
Oh, shit. That's cool.
Yeah, Tennant has been doing some great voice work lately. He was Fugitoid in the Ninja Turtles and did a fantastic job of that. I you know, when I found out Tennant was going to be Fugitoid, I was like, what the fuck? How are you going from Dr. Goddamn Who to a bit character on Ninja Turtles? This is super weird.
It's like, how are you going to be, you know, this Time Lord, time-traveling alien to being this robot time-traveling alien? That's so strange.
But on... Right. But I mean, it is strange, because how are you going to be a character slightly derivative of the character you're best known for in live action, but instead do it in a modestly priced 3D animation for children?
Probably because he likes Ninja Turtles and he has a sense of humor.
And that is why he's a great Scrooge McDuck.
Yeah.
That's pretty great. That's a nice touch. I can't wait to see it.
Yeah, and the cast is absolutely freaking-tastic. Danny Pudi played Abed in Community is Huey. Ben Schwartz is Dewey. Bobby Moynihan is Louie. And Kate...
Bobby Moynihan?
Moynihan, yep. I knew, I've heard it.
Saturday Night Live.
Yeah, and then I saw it written, right? And I was like, oh boy.
Yeah.
He gets around. He's the guy who gets around.
Who was the other one?
Ben Schwartz.
Who's that?
I don't recall off the top of my head, and I didn't write it down.
Okay.
So, Ben Schwartz, but good.
I'm really terrible with names. I'm surprised that I got Moynihan.
I mean, I'll tell you right now, he plays Dewey, and Dewey is the best duck so far.
Okay.
So, best duck. Well, except for Webby Vanderquack, who has been seriously upgraded as a character.
Refresh my memory. Who is that?
She's the niece? She's or daughter of Mrs. Beakley, the maid.
Oh, okay. I remember now.
Yep. So
this is unlocking memories from really far back.
Yeah.
Launchpad is in it, and most important to the very strong connections that this series has with the comic books, Donald is in it as a main character throughout.
Good.
And he is unfucking intelligible.
Well, that's the way he should be, right?
But way more than normal. It's incredible. You can understand maybe 10% of what he's saying without straining yourself.
That's funny.
I read, I don't know if it's a rumor, but are they going to bring in Darkwing Duck?
They are going to bring in Darkwing Duck.
What about I forget his name, but he was like a superhero.
Gizmo Duck?
Yes.
Venton Crackshell, the accountant?
Yes.
They certainly could. And in the first episode alone, in fact, within the first 10 minutes of the first episode, they mentioned in passing, just for world building, I guess, Cape Suzette from Tailspin, Spoonerville from Goof Troop, and St. Canard from Darkwing Duck.
Wow.
What? We are living at the beginning of a Disney afternoon shared
cinematic universe.
And it is going to be great.
The Duckburg cinematic universe.
I mean, I was all about having some great Darkwing connections because of Gizmo Duck, there's always been a Darkwing connection to DuckTales.
Yeah.
But when they said Cape Suzette, and that's the first bone throw that they had, I was like, holy shit. Tailspin, if they could just, and there's a news article, it says something about Sky Pirates. I'm like, yes.
Well, wasn't Launchpad
in Darkwing?
Oh, right. Wait, who was in Tailspin? Was there a crossover?
No crossover.
Oh, yeah, none. It was all
okay. Mammals. I'm thinking of Darkwing then.
And it was dubious what time period Tailspin took place in, because it was very like 1940s, 30s, Indiana Jones kind of.
Pulp adventure-y.
Right. Kinda. Yeah, and like, did DuckTales take place then? I don't know. They had Gizmo Duck, so probably not.
I'd be pretty pumped for a new Tailspin, because a Tailspin spinoff, because I always felt like the opening sequence got me pumped as a kid, but I would always fall asleep in the middle of an episode because nothing ever really happened. All the exciting plane flying was in the opening, and then
yeah, some of the stuff I haven't seen for like 20 plus years.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
Tailspin always had a really just cool vibe to it because it was so like edge of the known world, like city in the tropics,
in a jungle,
and a bar that's on an island and stuff like that.
Buildings in the treetops, so like everything was like a treehouse. I don't know. It's interesting.
Yeah, it's a good vibe. So I'm very.
Weren't they like mice or something? Or
no, they were bears.
It was all
sorts of mammals.
Yeah.
Oh right.
Shere Khan, because they were all jungle.
Oh,
book
that's
characters.
Right. Was it Baloo?
Baloo. Yeah.
But was he called Baloo?
He was called Baloo. Yeah.
Yeah, and Shere Khan was Shere Khan,
a businessman.
But yeah, he's wearing a suit. So it's like you watch Jungle Book,
and Louie ran the bar on the island.
If you watch Jungle Book and then watch Tailspin, you're like, what the fuck happened? Like,
I genuinely don't know. I don't know the story
of developing
Tailspin.
From Planet of the Apes got breathed in the jungle, and they all started wearing clothes and speaking.
I was thinking the one with the chipmunks. What was that?
Oh, that was Rescue Rangers.
Yeah.
I was thinking of Rescue Rangers for some reason.
Which is, Rescue Rangers, I've always felt, is in a shared universe with The Rescuers. It was like clearly a spinoff, a television version of The Rescuers, just like Bonkers is clearly a weird TV adaptation of
and
Roger
totally
Rabbit.
And totally nuts. Mm.
And those things can't possibly exist in the same reality as these other shows, but the ones with talking animal people in a world of talking animal people, they all are apparently together, which is great. I'm super excited about it. Now, this premieres out, but the next episode doesn't happen until September 23rd. So if you want to track down this first episode, you've got a little over a month. Go forth. John, it's been a while since we've done any SciTech talk. What's cooking?
Well, I mean, like, a team managed to figure out how to actually suck CO2 out of the atmosphere and using nothing but solar power converted into long chain carbon nanotubes.
Was this in those, they kind of looked like semi-trailers or something. Is that the same thing?
Semi-trailers? No, I mean, these guys are planning to, like, basically take things that, they basically look like oil rigs, actually.
Oh.
Put a bunch of solar collectors on the top of them and, you know, basically use that to superheat materials.
Okay, the one I read an article about extracting CO2 from the atmosphere and converting it into, like, fuel.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, there's a lot of, obviously, you know,
that's the one I'm thinking,
right?
Of.
Like, yeah. Technically. So there's a lot of weird stuff you can do with CO2, ultimately, if you just have all your chemistry in order. But what makes this so particularly interesting, of course, is that, like, we kind of need to lower the CO2 in the atmosphere. So, like, what the fuck do you do, right? You know, how do you
right,
do
because
that profitably?
We can't, it's impossible for us to reverse global warming just by stopping doing things. The only thing we can do is drastically take super science into our own hands to stop it.
Right. I mean, you would hope that eventually the Earth would catch up, hopefully.
How do you mean?
But,
well, you know, I mean, most of it is absorbed by the ocean. So in theory, you know,
for
like,
now.
Even though it would be really bad, like there could be a big algae bloom that starts helping out.
Or
more.
Hurting severely,
but,
depending
but that would,
on what
you know,
kind
that,
of
that would
it
perhaps
was.
Kill all of us. So, you know.
Right. Right.
The Earth
and
would be
that
fine.
And the whole point really about like global warming and why it's such a hazard at this point is because, like, you know, has the temperature been warmer before? Of course it has. But it also took literally tens of thousands of years to reach that naturally. And we've managed to, on the other hand, like basically just turn the lever all the way to the right kind of a thing in, you know, 100 years.
Right,
of,
like,
you
even
know,
within our own
thousands.
Lifetimes, it's insane how different, like, winters and summers and stuff are compared to even
right.
when I was a child.
Dude, I was just thinking the exact same thing. I was outside at one of the parks recently here in Orlando, and it's all pavement, right?
Yeah.
And I remember, like, you know, I came to the same park as a kid at the same time of year many years in a row. Never was it this bad. Like, it's insane. And then there's that interactive graph that came out recently. It's a weird circular temperature.
Oh yeah,
range.
Where it shows
the animated. Yeah, where
like
it shows
the average temperature each
exactly.
month for every country around the
yeah
the
right,
world.
Around the world.
A radio
yeah.
graph, or
and then
yeah.
like starting in like 1995, suddenly it's like it just starts ratcheting
yeah.
up until finally like you hit like 1999, 2000, and it just like fucking blows up after that.
Yeah,
I'm surprised we're still alive.
it's crazy because yeah, like winters are more intense now, summers are more intense.
Which is exactly what was postulated would occur. I mean, you know, even the winters being weird. And bar all the conversations about that stuff and focusing back on this specific technology, the whole point here is, though, is like, you know, what do you do politically, right? Well, you stop all carbon dioxide. Well, that's, like, really hard. I mean, we all breathe out carbon
yeah,
dioxide.
Yeah, stop breathing, so, people.
Yeah.
So stop breathing.
Put a cork in your cow's anus.
I was just about to say, we got to kill them cows.
Well,
start killing
there's
them.
Actually an interesting solution to that, but I'll let John continue.
Yeah,
stop charging your electric car with, you know, coal power plants, et cetera, et cetera. And so it's like a really huge problem. And so, you know, conversely, you could, of course, I don't know, just be like, okay, we're going to suck all the CO2. We're going to sequester it. We're literally just going to try to store it underground and hope to God it doesn't leak back out again, you know, in a gaseous state. And all these other, like, you know, fantastically bad ideas where you're just
well,
like,
if you think about
sure
it,
this is not the solution to the problem.
Yeah, if you think about it, in theory, you could just make coal out of CO2.
Well, and that's practically where this is gone, though thankfully not coal, because seriously, what the fuck, right?
Yeah, fuck coal.
So here's the fucking crazy shit. They actually managed to make millimeter length carbon nanotubes, and they think that they can actually get that price down to basically about, in other words, their actual manufacturing cost would only be $660 per ton.
Now, I love a good tube, but what does a carbon nanotube do for me?
Oh, God.
Space elevators. Space elevators.
So, 660 per ton, but the current market value for that is $100,000 to $400,000 per ton.
Oh.
So, in other words,
so you could be rich.
Should actually work to fix the CO2 level.
But why? Why?
Why do you want them?
Why do I want to pay premium for tiny tubes?
Because the shit can be woven into actual clothing, which would make bulletproof, taser-proof suits, You can mix the stuff into like ceramics and cement to make them more fracture and blast resistant.
Couldn't you also make a Vanta Black with this?
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, like,
you're familiar with Vanta Black, aren't you?
Well, of course. I understand it, it's illegal for anybody but the inventor of the color Vanta Black to make Vanta Black.
I don't know.
No, that wasn't the problem.
They forbid anyone from using it.
They forbid anybody to use it for the purpose of making art except for that one artist who is a douchebag. However, to be fair, Vanta Black wasn't ever going to really be used by anybody else anyway, because that specific formulation is, like, really, really, really difficult to apply. So that same group that made Vanta Black is now making another black that will actually be easier to apply and hopefully won't be individually licensed to one, you know, dick, basically.
Sweet.
But you could probably do some really cool stuff with stealth planes in that, too.
Well, I mean, assuming that it also works for radar, which is the number one way that you would ever find a plane.
Yeah.
I mean, otherwise, it's just...
Have we ever had enough carbon nanotubes to completely coat a plane and test that out?
Or just the underside, really. Just do the underside first.
Will it still fly afterwards, or does it somehow cause, like, a horrible problem?
There could be, like, literally really weird micro eddies or something.
Which could maybe even be beneficial, but
yeah,
I mean,
that's possible.
It's invisible to radar. It actually holds it together really well. The only side effect is it just whistles really loudly as it flies by. You can hear it from miles
away. I was thinking more
loudly,
like it might be more like a golf ball effect. You know, like the reason that they have divots on golf balls only like microscopic.
Right.
Yeah, divots make it all go faster.
Because the golf balls would be too loud if they didn't have the divots.
I could have sworn I read an article
It's not about
years
sound.
Ago that was
it's
about
making
about, like whale fins or something, and how they actually come into like micro spikes at the very tip.
Oh yeah, yeah,
huh?
All sorts of weird stuff. I mean, when you get into like microscopic liquid fluidics, I mean, you know, crazy, right?
Well, yeah, like shark skin is really insane if you look at it in a microscope.
Yeah,
too.
Yeah. And I mean, sharks also have that crazy electromagnetic sense, which is apparently insane. What was it? Like, they could tell the difference if they were in, like, Miami and you put a AA battery in New York City or something. Like, that was how perceptive their electric sense was.
Oh.
Literally nonsensical.
That's like, fucked up. Why do they have that power?
How do they know I'm throwing batteries into the water in New York?
They are the ocean's guardians.
I gotta tell you, boys, we got this surplus batteries. We gotta move them. I gotta get rid of it. I can't handle this much heat. Just dump them in the Hudson.
But boys, you bring the sharks.
Hey, I ain't worried about the sharks. What are they, some new gang? I ain't worried about them.
Throw them away one D-cell at a time. They'll never notice.
Clearly why street sharks became a thing.
Jossum.
So the whole point is that if you took just, I mean, the Sahara is huge, right? Like, that is a big desert. But if you took
4%, never been
there. If you ever look at Google Earth, it's terrifying how big that place is. I mean, it doesn't make rational sense. It's like a scar on the planet. But if you took 4%
of
it.
Sorry. That's more of a plague.
Sorry, 4% of the Sahara Desert.
4% of the super 4% of the surface area of the Sahara Desert would be enough to restore the entire Earth's atmosphere back to pre-industrial levels in 10 years.
Wait, so carbon nanotubes are going to help us turn a portion of the Sahara into a forest, like that one bit of Chrono Trigger?
No.
I think there's actually a statistic that's similar on solar panels.
I can talk about how to do that, though.
Okay, no, yeah, there's a lot of overlap talking. I just know that we were talking the carbon nanotubes, and then a certain percentage of the Sahara Desert can help.
If it was converted into
nanotubes.
Plants to make these nanotubes out of the atmosphere.
You set up facilities on 4%, you've got pre-industrial levels back in 10 years.
I got you.
Industrial
okay,
plant,
I got you.
Not, yeah.
Okay, I'd say like a carbon nanotube becomes a plant.
No,
like, what the fuck?
Doug,
like,
follow along.
I'm trying
God.
To, but we're all talking.
I mean, you guys do have to remember, of course, that it was carbon nanotubes that they added into the spider feed or whatever and made them have like crazy super duper strong silk, even stronger than normal spider silk, which is
they fed
crazy.
Spiders tubes?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, man, that happened. I mean, I don't know if these specific millimeter tubes are, like, the right size or if they're actually too large to do that with, but that was the thing that happened.
Are they food-grade carbon nanotubes for the spiders?
Well, that's the
whole
problem.
You have to inject them into flies. It's this whole process.
Okay, so what you're saying is you pull carbon out of the atmosphere, you make tubes, folks get rich, global warming gets reversed.
I'm just saying
it sounds like what we need is an adventure capitalist.
It does.
Jump start my heart. We need someone who's richer than the Richies and tougher than the Tuffies, or however that goes.
And anyway, still alive, not Casper.
Smarter than the Smarties and tougher.
Wait,
than
was
the
Casper
Tuffies.
Rich?
The joke was that he was the ghost of Richie Rich.
Okay, gotcha.
He's like, looks identical.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, what was it like? Musk, he's actually going to make Hyperloops now, right?
Yeah, they did that successful test, right?
I think they got permission to do like.
Musk said before, like, I'm not going to get into it unless people aren't moving on it, and now he's moving on it. So,
yeah, they got permission to go between like two cities, supposedly, right?
DC and New York.
Oh shit!
But then I also heard later that the mayors of those cities had never heard of anything about this.
Which is all the more interesting, right?
Well,
perhaps the mayors aren't really in charge.
Tough titties, folks. You're getting a super, super fashionably scientific mode of transportation. Deal with it. You'll be fine. Except that you'll also be underwater because both of those cities are very low-lying and prone to flooding.
Well, New York, actually, I mean, you can go drill down pretty far in New York. There's some like gigantic caverns underneath.
They have something called bedrock.
Yeah.
So theoretically, you could actually wall up the entire city.
Oh, we should probably get on that. They're going to need it.
Yeah, we can't, on the other hand, down here in lovely Florida. The entire thing is nothing but limestone, which is porous.
That's why New York has subways, and then they have subways beneath the subways, and then they have like giant caverns that they've carved out that they don't do anything with, and they're thinking about turning into parks.
I can't help but notice that you didn't mention the mole people, which are also all down in all these tunnels.
I don't like to talk about no mole people. We all know that ain't no thing. It's lizards.
Lizards who live in the core of the earth, siphoning the heat off of Mother Earth's warm, molten womb. It is quite frankly disgusting, and I'm against it.
So I can't decide if Elon Musk is in cahoots with them. He's trying to get us underground with his boring company, and he's just really good at digging because he is one of them lizards.
Or maybe he's a freedom fighter.
Or maybe he wants us to get down there so we can fight him. I don't know.
Easy access.
We better check him out.
Well, Hyperloop is basically a gigantic pistol pointed at the heart of the lizard man underground. Kapow!
Yeah, but what about the rocket programs, though, if he's trying to make contact with the home world?
I ain't know if we're going to go out and buy the Teslas to fund this or not.
He's going to go to Mars and lead an extinction party to make sure that there aren't any of them left on the Martian surface.
He's just trying to bring us to them.
Anyway, we have a number of important contributors and nutraceuticals to tell you about. Please support Scale Watchers on Patreon.
You mean vitamins. We ain't selling none of them scammy nutraceuticals.
Yeah, right. Well, vitamins, I mean, technically speaking, they are a nutraceutical, but they are vitamins.
Yeah, but they is a higher quality than anybody else is even allowed to sell.
That's true. You will literally die if you do not use them. Anyway, we have some new patrons. Everybody, please welcome these awesome people who are supporting this show and all the shows on the Nerdy Show Network, beginning with Benjamin Britt,
Alan Larson,
Jerome Marchand,
and Christopher Mina. One of those things.
Let's say Mina. Oh? Welcome, friends. Welcome to this experience. We hope you enjoy all the bonus perks that are being sent to you in your emails. And one of the features you can get from the myriad features and bonuses that come with being a patron of the Nerdy Show Network are shoutouts at $10 or more. And we have a couple here for you today, including one from Jameson Lalone. I believe, Boar, you've got
that
one.
Oh, hey, that's me. He writes, not sure if this is the proper channels to request a shoutout, but this one is specifically for Boar. Hey, that's me. And he says, can we get some Derpy Show love, and how about a train break? It's kind of hard to wrangle some of the other Derpy Show crew at this point, but I'll see what I can do. maybe I'll try to plan something for the future for you and see if we can inject just a little bit of extra Derpy Show into Nerdy Show. I don't have anything for you right now, but yeah, I mean, Neo Faust sometimes is easy to pull in, so I'll see what we can do for you.
For buddy. People who aren't hip to old school Nerdy Show programming, well, first of all, go to nerdyshow.com/derpyshow and discover that. But what is a train break?
A train break. When we first started recording Derpy Show, I recorded it with the Derpy Show crew in a house that was really close to train tracks. And so instead of when we would hear a train go by, usually they were blowing their whistles for some reason because they like to do that near our house. Instead of stopping the recording, we would yell out train break and we would all start beatboxing along with the train. So there'd be like a whistle in the background. We'd be like, you know, and various beatboxings Woo! Would happen. And those became a sensation for some reason. We just injected them in because why the fuck not? And people were like, yes, that's my favorite part. And so like we would make sure to record at that house and get the trains occasionally. But later on in Derpy Show, I moved away from the train tracks to perhaps a more posh neighborhood, and we lost the train break at one point. So it's kind of nostalgic that somebody wants one. So,
well, what we're going to have to do is we're going to have to get some big speakers and sort of put them outside the studio so they can you can get the reverberations through the walls, but press them up against the walls.
Yeah.
And play some audio from, well, I don't know, freesound.org.
You know me, I've got speakers that could do that.
Yeah, no, we can do this. We can do this, but Jameson, it's going to take a bit for us to get those hosts together and rig up this setup to create an authentic train break.
And I can tell you this, guys, for anybody else out there that wants any Derpy Show related content, flood us with requests for it, because if I can show the other Derpy Show crew that you guys love them and want them to come back, I can maybe arrange something.
At least a special.
It's difficult to motivate them, though, but I know that they love the attention and knowing that people like what we did. So, you know, like I said, just send us more messages and we'll try to make
where,
that happen.
Where should they do that? Where should they send messages?
Send them to boar@derpyshow.com or... yeah, that'll probably be the best way. That'll go direct to me. You can encourage me there. I can forward it on to the rest of the crew. And yeah.
Cool. And we have one more Patreon shout out. This is a monthly reoccurring message from True Roosevelt, Jeffrey McSorley. John, take it away.
Is it that whole thing?
Yes, it is.
Oh, okay. Do you have old shirts? Shirts that are nerdy, but have holes in them, or simply are too stretched out from wearing them over the last 1, 2, or even 5 years. Well, boy howdy, do I have a suggestion for you. Toss out your old crummy clothes or donate to a thrift store and replace them with genuine Nerdy Show t-shirts. Yes, you heard me right. You too can replace your faded Mario and Game of Thrones tees with the likes of your favorite Nerdy Show Network show. Show support for Nerdy Show to your friends. Or just get a peek of Thor and astound all around you with its glory. So go ahead, eliminate the ragged shirts of yesteryear and replace your wardrobe with all the shirts that Nerdy Show has to offer. Just follow the links at nerdyshow.com/store.
Now, you can support us on Patreon, and that is the best thing, because that way we know how much money we're able to have to keep the show alive, start new projects, pay the bills. That's awesome. But also, you can give one-time donations at nerdyshow.com/support. Now, Jameson Lalone, he's already a patron. That's why he has that shout-out. He just asked for that question. But he gave us a one-time donation of $100 recently.
Damn!
And with it was this letter. Greetings, Nerdy Show crew. Due to the mess of my own personal life, my podcast backlog has grown to being about 6 months behind on many of the Nerdy Show podcasts. 2 weeks ago, I got to drive from Baltimore to San Diego and began my catch-up.
Holy shit, that is a drive. I don't know if you can even go much further in the United States without like doing a complete diagonal from like the Florida Keys up to Alaska. Yeah. That's pretty extreme.
Yeah, no kidding.
That's like 4 or 5 days worth of driving that it's he did. I just wanted to put that into perspective.
Yeah,
for people.
Yeah.
I burned through so much Liberty and Dungeons and Doritos, it's not even funny. Although I guess taking a 40-hour road trip will do that. After flying home for a week, then flying back to San Diego to begin the return drive, I see the post about the Dungeons and Doritos hiatus and was deeply saddened just from the post. And then I listened to Cap's announcement and my heart sank. My thoughts go out to Rule and his family. I guess for those of you who aren't aware, Dungeons and Doritos is on hiatus, and we have a short post in the Dungeons and Doritos feed explaining that. He goes on to say, I've been listening for a long damn time and am not as interactive as I could slash should be. I'm another one of those who, thanks to my brother Jeff, came on board after Brian Clevenger's post on nuclear power. Hell, I think the last time I reached out was when I sent you guys the Nostalgia Bomb, read Box of Crap, for book club usage. After seeing the post, I felt compelled, even before hearing about Rule, to step beyond my normal Patreon recurring contributions to do more. So here's 100 bones. I know you can't sustain on one-time donations, but the big nerdy family needs to stick together. Signed, Jameson Lalone, hashtag always be lurking, hashtag always be Roosevelting.
Nice.
Yeah.
Amazing. And, thank you so much.
And he's got such great taste, you know, liking Derpy Show that much. You know, so thank you again for the contribution and your fine taste in programming. Derpy Show, the best podcast ever.
and a true Roosevelt move, classy through and through.
Yeah,
Thank you so much.
Too cool. Thank you.
Now, one other way you can help support us is by shopping on Amazon via our Amazon links at nerdyshow.com/Amazon. Just follow the links, buy the stuff you're going to buy, have a good time. And Doug, some fine folks have told us the stuff they bought.
Indeed.
So here's an example of what you can do and how you can actualize your Amazon purchases. Take, you know, send that money to those draconian overlords, but also send some money to Nerdy Show in the process. At least it eases your conscience a bit.
Mm-hmm. We got a message from Dizdon Bates, who says, bought my wife's dad a birthday gift. I think that also could be called a father-in-law. Bought my wife's dad a birthday gift totaling $40. Hoping you guys get a nice cut from the grill spices and ceramic nut bowl shaped like a squirrel. Always use Nerdy Show Amazon links. It pays.
Hubba, hubba, hubba. Money, money, money.
Yes.
Who do you trust?
Thank you very much, Disney. And we have a message from Big Bad Shadow Man, who just simply said, I just pre-ordered a bunch of Pacific Rim stuff.
Hell yeah.
Huh. I didn't know there was a bunch of Pacific Rim stuff to pre-order, but I'll have to go look into that.
There's some figurines. There's some books. Some comic books. Some great comic books.
Huh.
Okay. Hype's getting real with that first teaser for the second one coming out.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I've got one from Cerebral Paladin. He writes, I've bought a number of small items over the past few months, but recently had to replace my G700 gaming mouse. This mouse was a dear friend who has been in my company and in the gentle hand... in my gentle hands for over 6 years. They no longer make that model, so I'm trying out the G602 instead. I hope it will help me kill many aliens, zombies, monsters, and terrorists. Perhaps even save a princess or two. In the very least, it will throw a few bucks your way. Keep up the great work in these lean times. Thank you, Cerebral Paladin.
Now, if you can't support financially, then you can totally do it for free by rating and reviewing us on iTunes or rating and reviewing our series or individual episodes on Podchaser. Podchaser is a new platform for podcast discovery. And if you go to nerdyshow.com/podchaser, you can get all the info on how it works, how to use our beta keys to get in on the beta, and rate and review our series to your heart's content. Now, some awesome people have been doing just that. It's amazing because you can find specific episodes by searching terms. So if you're looking for a show about a certain thing, or you want to find an RPG podcast where they play the Ghostbusters tabletop game, you can do that. You can't do that on iTunes. iTunes is vague and weird.
Can we start just the trend of calling it the iTunes killer?
I think I would love to call it the iTunes killer.
People might just start getting behind it then.
Podchaser is the iTunes killer. At least insofar as you discovering podcasts, you can subscribe through whatever means you do.
Especially since I refuse to use iTunes for anything.
Yeah, it's a pain in the ass, and you can't. It's awful. It's a super pain in the ass. Even when I'm reading people's reviews that they send us, I have to dictate it on Siri because they won't let you copy and paste text from it.
Yeah,
really.
Even though you own the feed.
Yeah. It's super annoying. So on Podchaser, that ain't a problem. So I want to point this out. We were at one point in the top 10 rated podcasts on Podchaser, but understandably, the bigger shows that even your grandma knows about.
They started to open the floodgates to more people.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Nerdy Show's presently at number 16, holding the line at 30 ratings and 13 reviews. We need 67 to be at the tippy top. Come on, guys.
Which really isn't that much
more. No, it's not. Yeah. It's not. Let's get up there. Let's up the ante. And the Dungeons and Doritos, for example, they're it's at 32, rank 32 with 19.
We know there's more than 60 some of you out there.
Yeah.
We can see you, so don't pretend.
Since this is the iTunes killer, it's way easier to use Podchaser than iTunes.
Oh, yeah.
So it's like...
Yeah, it's super easy.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you go to our website, what is it? Nerdyshow.com/podchaser,
correct.
I believe.
Yep.
You go there, and there's a couple of sign-up keys and links and exactly what to do. Super easy stuff.
Yep. And I just want to give a bone throw to Abiz, who's been doing some great reviews, including this one, on for Nerdy Show. Always fun and interesting. Spend most of their time being genuinely excited, but never feel fake or forced. Thank you for being awesome and nerdy. And thank you, Abiz, for also being awesome and nerdy.
I always try to feel fake and forced, so I need to do a better job of that.
If I'm out of bed... I'm fake and forced.
I need to tap into my inner morning radio DJ that's in me to be fake and forced, you know?
Well, you also probably need a soundboard.
Yeah, I need a soundboard with some effects.
A and toilet flush. Like,
hey, oh, welcome to Nerdy Show. Bing, bong, boing. Ooga, ooga.
We did a multicast about that, didn't we? A multiverse podcast.
We certainly did. And I got to say, the more it was fun at the time... But the more I think about it, the more dirty it feels.
Yeah. Or fake and force, in other words.
Fake and force, yeah. I mean,
oof. Which, that's another thing you can do. If you want to help more people experience Nerdcasting the Multiverse, find it on Podchaser and upvote it.
Yeah, that's specific
you can
episode.
Because you can vote, or not vote, what am I saying? You can rate specific episodes.
And review and tag with categories.
Yeah.
And the categories are going to be, in future developments from Podchaser, categories are going to be at the forefront of user-generated tags so people can discover the shows you
love. So if we do something cool and fun like that that you enjoy, if you find it on Podchaser and vote it up, it not only exposes more people to it, but then we'll see it and we'll be like, oh, they really like
this. They
want more
of this.
They want more of that. Yeah. Let's do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's super-duper helpful. So Podchaser, do check it out. I think it's going to be the future. I think it's going to kill iTunes.
Yes. And if you go and you rate it, you don't have to write a review. You can come back and write the review later.
Yeah. There's
it
no
saves your information.
Yep. It's super easy.
It's freaking crazy.
So back to the main show. A while back, I talked about Splatoon 2. They did one of their early test fires of the game. And now, thanks to the kind, dear sweetheart of Jess, she saw that I was trying to be responsible and not buy a new video game and... as a belated birthday present, she sent me a copy of Splatoon 2.
Oh boy.
Because she is a dear sweet friend. So I've been playing Splatoon 2 and it is the dog's teats. And
is that good?
Oh, it's real good.
There's a lot of them.
There's more bang for your buck. Dog teats everywhere.
Gotta get that milk.
it's where milk comes. Well, not necessarily.
Well, that's a different topic.
Want to learn more about Dilk, you go on there into the multiverse episodes.
Thanksgiving special. So Splatoon 2 offers, now that I've gotten to play the full game, 100% more of the same quality of the first game. If you love that online multiplayer, if you love that fun single-player campaign, it's got all that. But tighter, better, and some shit that I did not expect at all. There is a whole new mode of online play called Salmon Run, and this thing is weird as fuck, because at random intervals, like 12 hour periods of time or so, on different days, a door in like the courtyard room of Splatoon will open up, and you'll be able to get a job working for a company called Grizzco. And Grizzco is this very shady organization harvesting eggs from these creatures called salmonids. These fish people.
Okay.
So you put on your galoshes and go out to some weird dredge place in the ocean that looks like a thing from Fallout Far Harbor and fight some Fallout Far Harbor monsters that come out of the ocean streaming.
And this is in Splatoon?
This is in Splatoon.
What?
Streaming their own inky slime behind them. And it is a four-player co-op thing It's what people are, I guess, call horde mode these days.
Uh-huh.
So there's three waves. These different hordes of monsters come up.
Oh, so it's kind of like Left 4 Dead, only you're in Splatoon.
Right. Left 4 Dead without a narrative winding you through spaces, but very Left 4 Dead.
Huh.
Because there's basic enemies of various sizes and types, and then there's bosses that come through, and the bosses give you the golden eggs that you have to harvest from them. And you need to take those eggs after you acquire them from the bosses back to the harvesting thing.
I have a question.
Yes.
Is there a salmon cannon?
There is.
Oh my God.
There is. The bosses are super weird. I mean, the character design in Splatoon is always on point for even the background characters, and these salmonids are gross and fucking strange. There's one that's kind of like a Chinese dragon, but a fish skeleton that's spraying slime, and then at the very back of it, at the tail, is a tiny little salmonid who's like operating it like the cleaners in Labyrinth.
What?
There's
is this actually a little spoopy, little scary?
It is, yes. there's a tower of kettles that turns into it's basically this giant sniper tower with this weird salmon cannon at the top of it spraying huge squirts.
I was referring to real life salmon cannons where they load up salmon to get them up like upstream. Have you seen that where they'll catch salmon and they have the salmon cannon where they throw the salmon in there and then it helps them swim upstream. It launches them upstream.
Yeah, it literally like fires salmon.
Yeah.
Screwing with evolution.
I have not seen
it. You can't make it up the creek. You don't deserve to mate.
It basically is screwing with evolution, helping the salmon.
Like the one salmon that worked its tail off to get to the spawn point. Turns around, it's like, oh, that one dumbass salmon's never going to get up here.
When they get stuck, people just pick them up, load them into the cannon.
And they get up there all refreshed. They didn't waste all their energy trying to get up the thing.
I feel like that might have been because we changed the flow of the rivers and so we're kind of countering it. But yeah, no, I mean, you know.
Well, thanks to tampering with salmon genetics by letting the weak salmon prosper, that's where you get salmon it's from. So
there you go. It's like, again, this would be my second War for Planet of the Apes reference this episode.
It's super strange. The boss types are amazing and difficult and challenging, and they only tell you about some of them because, as they make a point of saying, much like the sea, you can never truly know the mysteries, and the only way to prepare for it is to experience it. So So it's four players randomly assigned or co-op with friends if you can arrange that, and then you go, you do it, and you earn bonuses based on how many successive complete rounds you do.
Uh-huh.
And those bonus things allow you to accrue different kind of promotions and get special items. And every month there's different special items and different amounts of money and multipliers that you can take advantage of.
I was going to ask if they added in like the gambling crates like every game likes to add in now.
Nope.
Okay, good.
It's all hard work. It's your own hard work taking this weird job.
Nice.
And what is weird about it is that it really is at random hours. Like, part of the weird thing about Splatoon is in the first game, it was a full game on delivery, but they kept building it and they kept adding levels and they kept expanding it and gradually growing the game as the player base was evolving. And now they're not doing that the same way because they had an entire first game of development. There's people who are very experienced players already. So, but Splatoon's maps, they only do two at a time for every different level. They change every hour. So it's very much a real-time experience, and that it doesn't feel restrictive. It doesn't feel like a bad idea having this awesome mode of play that you can't do whenever you want. It makes it feel special and extra weird, and it is super weird, and I love that about it. I didn't even know this existed until like I stumbled down an alleyway yesterday, and where I knew there was like gonna be something, but I thought it was maybe related to an update. I didn't realize I just had to be there at the right time. And what's more, there's a Nintendo Switch app which is going to have different connective features for different games. Basically, you download one app, and if you just
on your phone or on the Switch?
On your phone.
Okay.
If you typically, you know, buy Nintendo products, say Splatoon's the first one, you'll tap the Splatoon icon on the Switch app. All your games will be there whenever there's connectivity with it. You can go on there. You can buy exclusive gear that changes daily. That's like not real world money, but Splatoon money.
Okay.
So it's just like another market for that. You can use it to communicate with your friends to arrange gaming dates and use the voice chat of your own phone, so Nintendo can like keep its hands clean of we're not helping pedophiles hypothetically connect with children.
Yeah,
but all the things are in place for you, a human being with a smartphone and presumably any parental controls as needed.
I was just going to say, man, I needed another instant messaging app because, you know, I just don't have enough these days.
It's not that, actually. Basically, you go and you start a game in the lobby, and then it sends a ping out through the app, and then you use the app as, like, basically your phone. It's...
Oh.
I haven't used it yet, but...
I thought you meant that, like, friends in Splatoon or whatever could bug you.
No, you go into the game, you set up a thing, you ping your friends, you can post a message to Facebook and say, hey, I'm playing Splatoon, follow this link to the app and whatever else. I haven't done this yet, but I've sort of seen how it works.
That's another thing I need more of. More apps that want to post to Facebook.
But in this case, it's good because if I don't know which
right,
of my friends...
People love game requests on Facebook.
I mean, do they?
No.
Because I've never done it. To me, that seemed really useful.
Oh.
Because I don't know who has Splatoon.
Well, I guess it's not a game request if it's just like, hey, I'm playing Splatoon. If you own Splatoon and want to play with me, click this link and you'll join my game.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's cool.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know.
So I'm pretty down with the Splatoon ecosystem. Like, it actually seems pretty well thought out and intriguing.
Interesting.
And rant. Now.
That sounded more like a rave, but we'll continue.
Good point. Fair point. So before we go, I do have one more thing. You may have heard that Nerdy.fm, our nerd music streaming service, is closing. On August 21st, that will be the last day that we're streaming it all, and then we're shutting it down. And that really, really sucks. It was a big surprise for us, but a culmination of a lot of separate factors. It's been running for 6 years. 6 years of exclusive music, special programming, interviews, and a curated selection of our favorite nerd music from all genres. We're all really proud of it and really pleased with what it accomplished. However, it's costing us a bit over $1,200 annually in monthly service fees, our developer accounts, and URLs like our domain name, nerdy.fm, recently went up from $79 to $169 a year alone. Mm. A bunch of costs that gradually snowballed, and then another new cost piled on top of that, which is that our streaming service, the service we use to stream Nerdy FM, is now logging ASCAP hours, and ASCAP is the American Society for Composers, Authors, and Publishers. Now, legally speaking, all of the music we play on Nerdy FM is artist authorized. Mm-hmm. We're totally in the right to play this music. However, if this bot starts logging any samples or covers or anything else that it mistakes as something that we're not allowed to play, that's a problem because they're going to contact us. And the only way that we could legally dodge all of this and not have to deal with all these potential lawsuits coming our way is to pay a performance rights organization, which could add at least $500 to that yearly total. Mm. And that means that Nerdy FM is living way outside of any funding that it gets, like way outside of it. So we just can't do it anymore, which is a terrible shame. However, we're launching a Nerdy FM podcast. Mark with a C is hosting a brand new podcast on Nerdy Show coming, I believe, in September. More details on that when it hits. But if you love nerd music, if you love Nerdy FM, then this is going to be just like Mark's Takeovers, and you'll get a little slice of it every single month, and it won't truly die, just the part where you listen to a radio station on the internet, which, you know, like I said, really sucks, but it is what it is. We've had a lot of big changes here at Nerdy Show, and what's super annoying about this is that there are a great many ones that we haven't expected, like Ghostbusters going on hiatus, Dungeons and Doritos going on hiatus, some of our big supporters having to pull out due to financing issues, and we didn't see any of that coming. But there are actual intentional changes to the way we do things that are coming up I worry that it's putting you, the listener, in a situation where you're like, what the hell is going on with Nerdy Show? Down is up, up is down, dogs and cats living together, mass hysteria. Nothing, like, is something wrong? And the answer is like, yeah, there's a lot of things wrong, but not really.
There's always something wrong.
Like, I mean, we're a small business struggling to keep afloat, and we have to change with the tides and all that. So we had some very intentional changes coming up that have nothing to do with these minor catastrophes that have been hitting us all summer long.
Yeah, like we've been getting punched here and there, but we're rolling with them pretty well, and we're just trying to come up with new strategies and stuff like that for making everything better in the future.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I suppose the thing, if you're like wondering like what the fuck is going on, or if you're a patron, you're like, what chaos am I backing? the actual thing is that things are different, things are changing, but ultimately everything's fine and we are rolling with those punches. For example, as I've said before, coming out of the unexpected hiatuses of Dungeons and Doritos and Ghostbusters Resurrection, we're going full speed ahead. Call of Cthulhu is coming back, and we're going to Our goal is for Call of Cthulhu to be a regular series now. It's been hugely popular. Everyone loves it. We love doing it. So we want that to be our thing, a thing that we're doing, the big thing that we're doing. And there's a bunch of other plans cooking as well. They're not firmed up enough that I feel like I can, I don't want to tell you something that's going to end up being like not true.
Right.
But that's the thing that we know of right now that is true. We're recording later this month. It's happening. We don't know when it's going to come out. We're going to be testing how quickly we can produce it and sort of figure out what kind of a schedule we can keep it on. But that's the goal. Call of Cthulhu is coming back. Nerdy FM is dying as a streaming service, but being born again as a podcast.
It's leveling up.
Maybe. Depending on
evolving.
It is definitely evolving. And this is in the small business world, growing always is painful. And let's consider it a phoenix-like cycle of death and rebirth. Maybe. That's what I'm thinking about it anyway. So
what we need is a salmon cannon for us.
Hey, you folks know any salmon cannons, let us know. We'll sliver our way inside of them and get rocketed to the top. But taking us out on that note is Schaefer the Dark Lords. Yes. Live from a Nerdy FM exclusive concert recording. All this kind of special content that we've made just for Nerdy FM. Keep an eye on the Nerdy FM Twitter and Facebook, because we're going to be playing all these exclusives at different events leading up to the end of Nerdy FM. So, here's Schaefer's Yes.
And it's not this dance. Thank you. What you wanna do, boo? What you get into? I just wanna bounce about and have some fun with you. There's something wild behind your smile, I see it trickle through. Maybe we could teach each other a new trick or two. So where to? My place or yours? Or anywhere where we can get behind closed doors. I'll gladly go and grab us up a cab, but before that, I must ensure that everything is well up aboard. Yeah, here's my full name, and here's my address, in case you wanna send them to your best friend in a text. Let them know where you're going, who you're with, and when you leave. Even ask them if there's anything they've heard about me. We've had a couple drinks tonight. Are you impaired? Are you stumbling? Are you fucked up? Or are you aware and coherent and quite capable of making decisions? Then cool, but I'll keep asking for conviction. And we go one, two, three, and three, four. For your words say yes, I'ma need a little more. I know you want it when you react with intent, but first I need that enthusiastic consent. And we go four, three, two, and two, one. I'll be checking in even after we're done. But before we progress, stop, before we undress, I'ma need a lot more than a yes. I don't see the mere fact that you flirt with me as a sealed contract of our sexual certainty. It doesn't matter what you said when you were sexting me. It only matters how you say it when you're next to me. And I don't care if we've done it before, or if earlier we made out on the dance floor. Or if tonight you change your mind, fall asleep, or say stop, then that's when this stops. But this isn't just about your consent to my desire. Let's talk about what you want and what lights your fire. You want me begging?
I'm into it.
In leggings?
I'm into it.
Are you interested in pegging?
Into it.
This could be amazing. We'll concern to assuage if we're good, giving, and game. And on the same page, everything in black and white and crystal clearer than day. No blurred lines, no shades of gray. And we go one, two, three, and four.
When your words say yes, I'ma need a little more. I know you want it when you react with intent. But first I need that enthusiastic consent. And we go four, three, two, and two, one. I'll be checking in even after we're done. But before we progress, stop, before we undress, I'ma need a lot more than a yes. So we go five, six, seven, two, eight. No means no is never up for debate. And the lack of a no isn't the same as a yes. And a yes
isn't it the same as an oh my god, yes. If that sentiment is expressed, we can't indulge to excess or only caress. But before we progress, stop before we undress. I'ma need a lot more than a yes. When I ask you wanna, you say yes. You wanna? You wanna? When I ask it's okay, you say oh yes. It's okay? It's okay? When I ask into it, you say fuck yes. Into it? Into it? When I ask keep going, you say no. Keep going? Alright, then this is done. Thank you.